Life is made up of experiences. Experiences shape our perspectives and allow us to pass along knowledge. In this podcast, I sit down with listeners like you and find out that no matter who you are, everyone has a story to tell. I'm Ethan Smith, and this is Life Experienced.
I have had many different ideas about my future when I was a kid. I think at one point I wanted to be like an Army 4-star general. I wanted to be an astronaut. I wanted to be a Lego designer.
Who doesn't, right?
I mean, yeah. But yeah, those are my biggest like dreams, I think. One time it was like Crocodile Dundee. I grew up on a 10 acres of countryside without many other like boys around. Mm-hmm. So I was always kind of wandering the place with my cats and making up adventures for myself.
That's Joshua Redding, and he's now a licensed professional counselor, which is definitely a long way from being a Lego designer or a Crocodile Dundee. However, his journey to becoming a counselor began in an unexpected place. Originally from Pennsylvania, Joshua received a scholarship to Virginia Tech, where he played guard on the football team. This led to several other experiences that would point him toward his career in counseling.
I played football in college. That was kind of what I thought I was going to do. I tried the NFL for a summer. I didn't like it very much. After that, I was really confused as to who I was as a person, because up until that point, yes, I was majoring in psychology, but if you look at the hours I spent playing football versus actually in the classroom, I would have said I majored in football, minored in psychology. So I tried the NFL, left the NFL, had offers to try out other places. I was just done. Went back to my hometown, moved in with my parents again, and they said, you know, you have 6 months with us, and then you got to find your own place and find a job. So I started working at a facility for young people. Who had just gotten out of the mental hospital. I worked there for about a year and a half, and since I'm a big guy, they sent me with the biggest guys that they had. So mostly like, you know, 15 to 18 year old boys. I really enjoyed working with them, and that was kind of my first taste of making an impact on other people's lives in that capacity. So that's my first inkling of it. And then I proceeded to look for a different job. I wanted to go overseas, so I applied for a job in the Dominican Republic. And I got accepted, and I went down there, and I worked down there for 4 years as a house father and a counselor as well, helping youth in that capacity. But then I wanted to kind of increase my role, so then I just decided to go back to school as a master's clinician.
Joshua's experiences in the NFL and in the Dominican Republic would further shape his career path. He contrasted his NFL experience with that of his time at Virginia Tech, saying he didn't enjoy the big business aspect of the league. As he stated, he eventually had the opportunity to move to the Dominican Republic, where he was in charge of structure for a home that provided cross-cultural experiences for teens. Joshua's work with the teens incited his desire to help people, and he decided the best way to do that was to pursue a career in counseling. So you said you'd then transition back to your master's degree. So
yeah.
Having been so far removed from, I guess, how many years were in the meantime?
So it was a year and a half at the treatment facility, and I spent 4 years in the Dominican Republic.
Okay.
So I went back to counseling at around 2008. So I was about 8 years removed from my undergraduate
degree. Okay. So was that a tough transition going back into the master's program after majoring in football? In undergrad?
yeah. So actually, I started my degree when I was down there for 2 years online. So
okay.
I kind of had a soft head start. But then I was like, you know, a counseling degree online, it didn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. So I went ahead and went back full time, teaching from a university in Virginia. So that's what was our transition. You know, they tell you that you shouldn't necessarily. So when I was down in the Dominican, I met my wife. And we got pregnant, so we changed jobs, had a baby, started graduate school, changed countries, all in like the same like year or two. And you know, the things they tell you shouldn't do together, we did.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure it was a wise thing to do, but
sure.
It happened, and we're still here.
Yeah,
better for worse.
That's great.
Yeah.
So what sorts of things did you do immediately after getting your master's degree? What kind of jobs, positions did you look for?
So for counselors, it's important to get licensure.
Sure.
So I try to look for a job that would help me get my licensure, because you can work for a job and then pay $70 an hour about once a week to have somebody sit with you to actually review cases and get licensed, or you can find a job that will actually help you pay licensure. So I worked actually three jobs after I graduated. I worked for the Commonwealth Center, which is the only public pediatric psychiatric hospital in Virginia. When I left there, I think they were still around 800 kids a year. They do really good work over there with what they have. And so I worked there for full time to get licensure and to help them out. And then I also worked for our local hospital doing psychiatric admissions. I was on call from midnight until 8 a.m. two nights a week. And I also worked another overnight shift at the local CSB, which is the Community Services Board, which is how we do mental health in Virginia on a local basis. I worked there as well.
Okay.
For eight hours a week overnight. So after I got licensed at the hospital, I worked for a different job for about 6 months, and I realized I did not want to be there. So I came back.
So you didn't like those like midnight to 8 a.m. shifts?
Those are things that you do when you're young because you have to, unfortunately.
But then again, on the other side, someone needs to do that. You know, someone's got to do that job because it's important for.
It's important that the hardest part, I think, sometimes, and I even look at this in our different settings, is we give very important jobs to folks with little experience, because we don't want to do those jobs. So I was put in places and situations I was not really prepared for, being the only person on call, talking to doctors in the middle of the night. That I really had no idea what I was doing, honestly, in some capacity. But after I left the Commonwealth Center, I went to work for a different facility, and I was there for about 6 months, and I didn't like what I was doing. So I came back home and talked to Emily, and I was like, Emily, I need some time off to rethink things. So Emily's my wife. So she actually went back to work as a teacher. So I stayed home with the kids for 6 months while she went back to work. And one of us was working all the time. In that time, I kind of processed what I'd gone through, because it was just a blur. I mean, literally from my experience in the Dominican Republic, coming back home, doing graduate school, and then working for 4 years at the hospital, it was just going. I had no time to actually sit down and consider what I was doing. So in those 6 months, I kind of wanted to, I discovered I wanted to work in higher education because I really liked the college population. I had some experience with working with them in previous ways, especially because when I was at my graduate school program, my wife and I lived in a college dorm with college students. That's how we kind of supported ourselves. I was looking around, and a job at Tech came open, and I applied for it, and I got it as the as a substance use counselor. And the funny slash sad part about this is that my supervisor at the hospital where I was at actually was licensed as a counselor and a substance use clinician. There's two different licenses in the state of Virginia. And she asked me if I wanted to be licensed in both, and I said, no, I don't plan on doing substance use counseling. So as fate would have it, here I am using substance use counseling.
Joshua still serves as a substance use counselor here at Virginia Tech, where he has the opportunity to help many students. After the break, Joshua discusses the major substance issues on college campuses and what his work as a counselor does to help. Life Experienced is brought to you this week by the new children's book, Mr. Gilmore's Glasses. Author and illustrator Heath Smith shares the story of two young girls who find themselves in quite the predicament after visiting their friend Mr. Gilmore with their father. Find out what happens by using the link in today's show notes or purchase a copy wherever books are sold. Welcome back. For many people, college is closely associated with partying and having a good time, and therefore alcohol is involved. But the reality is that often there are very few good times associated with excessive alcohol use. Here's what Joshua had to say about this. there's the stigma out there about
substance use,
yeah. especially alcohol mm-hmm. on a college campus.
Yeah.
So you're actually seeing the reality of that manifesting sure. itself. So I'd just like to hear your thoughts
I see a small sliver of folks that actually get reported. There's much more damage that comes from substance use than things that I see. There's failed relationships. There's lost jobs. There's physical accidents that the hospital sees all the time. So that the consequences of substance use are huge. And the bigger thing to me at this age, one of the things we're kind of learning about now with neuroscience, we understand that it's a very dangerous time to actually use substances because your brain is literally myelinating the neurons. So you're creating pathways for substance use, which is why most folks with a lifelong substance use disorder typically started in adolescence and early 20s. So this is kind of a hotbed for lifelong issues. So if we can reach out and help students figure out ways to minimize that impact, it's huge. So right now on college campuses, alcohol is still the number one drug. So that's probably one of our more important issues on campus right now is around sexual assault and uh-huh. helping folks understand those kind of things. not that, alcohol is the number one drug on college campuses, but it facilitates a lot of the stuff that happens that's in a negative light. I'm trying to understand that kind of stuff. But as far as neuroscience goes, the whole concept or the whole argument around like age 21 versus 18, which we hear a lot of, it comes to my office. It's challenging to help folks understand this. There's no science behind either one of those ages. When really, if you kind of study the dynamics of this kind of thing, it should be around the age 24, 25, when folks are able to use substances in that capacity, because it's much less damaging to the brain because you're done kind of developing your adult brain.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the money, that's actually where a lot of things conspire with insurance, right? You can't rent a car until you're 24, 25. And even your parents' insurance typically that these days until you're 26.
Mm-hmm.
So the money makes sense, though. If you follow that kind of trail, then you're like, oh, this is where mm-hmm. most things should happen.
Students visit Joshua through a variety of ways. They may self-refer to his office to seek help with substance use. Someone may refer a student if he or she is concerned about them, or often counseling is mandated after the resolution of a case that has gone through the student conduct system. Since every situation is different, I wanted to know how Joshua approaches counseling these students. How do you use your experiences to help these students?
Sure. So one of the things we do typically is I use motivational interviewing to help students kind of understand themselves and others. And that's by using their values, what they want to do versus what they actually value. So they are doing this, what they value is this. Those things kind of conflict. So I use myself in that capacity to help them kind of reflect on their own personal values. One of the things I often do pull from my own story, though, is the experience of being a young man and being lonely on a college campus. Because it's kind of scary, especially if you're an athlete coming from a high school. Typically, you have your squad, and it's pretty much formed when you come to college. When you're in high school, and then you come to college and you're kind of alone. So I think many young men feel alone, feel kind of where they feel like they should know what to do. And so a lot of them join fraternities or other groups. And they end up, belonging in that capacity. And so, but instead of playing sports, typically they may go out and use substance use to actually, that becomes their sport or becomes their new thing to do together. But it's all about, to me, it's about belonging and trying to find positive ways to belong and promote, health and well-being amongst members. And I think we're trying to do that at Tech, we're trying to kind of reform some of the ideas around fraternity and sorority identification, because it has become so prevalent with substance use. Hopefully we're able to kind of swing that back the other way. Yeah, so that's that's been my piece around, trying to find yourself as a young man in this society is kind of challenging, because you're kind of taught to really only have three emotions as a young American male, which is happy, horny, and angry. if you're sad or if you're other feelings which you may have because you're a human being, trying to help people understand those kind of things. Or even I've had guys come in and talk to me and be like, I don't understand why I'm crying. I don't like to cry. I'm like, you're crying because you experienced joy. and this is a natural reaction.
Sure.
And helping them through those kind of pieces is really meaningful to me, and watching them grow as a person and having some insight into themselves.
Yeah.
That's really what it's about. I mean, it's never about me as a counselor. Cause as a counselor, I view myself as a tool. I tell folks that. I'm like, don't you get tired of doing this kind of stuff? I'm like, you know, I'm like a hammer. You just hang up a picture. You come in and hang up the picture. You use the hammer and hang up the picture. And you put it down. And you walk away. I'm here for you to use. When you're done with me, you put me down. And if you need me again, you come pick back up.
Despite the negative aspects of substance use, Joshua finds encouragement in his position from the stories of students who overcome their addictions and situations. Stories like these are what keep him going. So I imagine you've also seen some, you talk about it being a lifelong struggle, but you've probably seen some people who have made positive steps in the right direction. Mm-hmm. So I imagine that's a rather encouraging aspect of your job.
Yeah. Yeah. We just celebrated our recovery graduation this past Thursday, and that was really cool. Last year we had 4 students who graduated in recovery, and this year we had 7 students who graduated. So some with master's degrees. I know we'll have a vet student, I think, next year. So it's really exciting to see folks in recovery succeeding. And a lot of tools that they use to succeed in recovery, they're using to succeed in college too. One step at a time, just breaking things out in small parts and kind of taking life on life's terms, learning how to deal with consequences and learning how to deal with some pain in that capacity. it's really moving, especially when you see the family members come and talk about, you know, where their student was at and where they're at now. It's really rewarding. So, and I've had students that come to us, you know, with, you know, 3 years of sobriety and then continue on. Many times people are afraid to go back to college because of their in recovery, and they don't want to be triggered. They don't want, because their youth maybe started in college or started when they were very young. Mm-hmm. The average student that's in recovery in college is around age 26. Because a lot of them typically, you know, leave their former institution and come back to a different college to kind of finish up. But yeah, it's great to see students succeed. And then I like collegiate recovery personally because I see my students becoming leaders in the community. They'll take jobs where they can actually impact policy and decision making. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, being able to tell their story, not being ashamed of their recovery, finding more acceptance, will help them create jobs and create policy that will encourage recovery. Right now, I'm also working with the Roanoke Collective Response up there to help them kind of create a blueprint for the addiction epidemic we have right now in America. So hopefully that will come to fruition within the next year or two. We can work with insurers to actually help them get businesses on board. Because right now, I think the number one businesses for substance use are construction and restaurants. And so, but if those places understand that if they have recovery meetings at their places of employment, they'll have better attendance from employees, they'll have more buy-in from employees, and their insurance rates may go down. Because then you're actually contributing them to, say, get help versus treatment costs. Mm-hmm. And so it makes sense financially, it makes sense personally, it makes sense, and nobody doesn't win. No, everybody wins when it comes to this kind of stuff. Nobody loses. So helping folks out in recovery, helping folks out with substance use disorders getting to recovery is a win for everybody.
Substance use affects many people in myriad ways. I asked Joshua what advice he would give to someone who is struggling, or to someone who might have a loved one who is struggling with substance issues. So what advice would you give to someone who might be struggling with something like that?
Oh, substance use? Yeah. Substance use is, in many ways, an illness of connection. I think that many folks, you know, want to connect. I find that many folks who struggle with substance use typically share 3 qualities, typically. They're pretty intelligent folks, usually. They're more intelligent than the average, in my opinion. Typically, they're pretty sensitive. I use the term, the world's kind of vibrating around you a little bit, and many people seem to kind of resonate with that kind of idea, the world's vibrating around them. And the third one is typically they're pretty perfectionistic. And they have a high idea of what they should achieve, what they should do, which can be a good thing. But if they can't get there, then it becomes very, very kind of depressing and very, very difficult. So But with connection, I think that brings in a piece as far as understanding the others out there that are going through the same struggle that you feel. So finding a group that can support you in this can really help. Many times, the common social intervention has been to have an intervention. You know, we think you have a problem. We want you. We're going to do this. We're going to send you away to this place. And it sometimes can is more effective to have the opposite effect. How can we support you? We love you. We want to be there for you. What do you need right now? Right. We know this is a hard time for you.
It seems like the sending people to get help is very common in like television shows, movies, yeah. All of these things.
Yeah.
So,
and it can be effective, right? So, I mean, their treatment is a good option for a lot of folks. Finding a good treatment center is hard to do these days because many of them out there that are scamming folks. So good treatment center is good. I think finding one that's local that can work with the family as well. If you have a good one in your area, it can be really important. Not many of them are that local because there aren't many out there that are good ones. But working with the center and understanding that this is a lifelong issue. This is not just something you go away, get treatment for, and come back, and it's cured. These are issues that will be persistent for a long time. I was just looking at Twitter the other day, and somebody who was part of the Columbine shooting had recently lost his battle to addiction from an opioid overdose, I believe. Even though he was in recovery for many years, he succumbed to his addiction at the end, which is sad to see, but a good reminder that this is something that we need to keep fighting and understanding more about, and just changing our view about how we kind of see people that suffer from substance use disorder. This is not something that, you know, we'd be pushing away, but something we need to be drawing close to us, and how can we help you and connecting with those folks. Because many times it is a battle that we don't know, you know, they're fighting.
Sure.
Because there's so much shame and stigma around that kind of stuff.
Right.
I talk to, you know, employers, talk to professors, try to help them understand how to be an ally, how can they support their folks in dealing with these issues. But find connection. If you're struggling, find connection. Talk to somebody about it. Find a counselor. you know, whoever you can trust. And if you can't trust anybody, talk to a professional.
Counseling positions like Joshua's exist across almost all college campuses. If you're a college student, reaching out to a licensed counselor is often very easy. Simply visit your college's health center web portal to find more information or a phone number you can call. If you aren't a college student, reaching out for help or getting advice on helping a loved one is as simple as calling the National Substance Abuse Hotline. That's 1-800-662-4357. And they'll connect you with someone who can help you in your area. Joshua plans to continue working in his role as a counselor for the near future. Hopefully, he'll be able to help many more students overcome substance use issues and succeed not only in obtaining their degrees, but also in having successful careers and using their experiences to help others. Life Experienced is hosted and produced by Ethan D. Smith and is primarily distributed via Anchor.fm. The show is also available via DSound, a decentralized audio sharing platform built on the Steam blockchain. For more information, visit DSound.audio. The music in this podcast is composed by Lee Rosevere and is used under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license. For more information, visit freemusicarchive.org. If you like the show, be sure to share it with others. Links to learn more about this episode, as well as more information on the podcast itself, may be found by visiting lifeexperienced.org. And for those of you still listening, I really appreciate your support for the show since it began last August. Following this episode, the show will be transitioning into a non-uniform release schedule. I'll still be recording interviews and producing episodes, but this will happen as they occur rather than keeping a weekly schedule. Don't worry, there will still be plenty more great interviews to come, so make sure you follow the show on social media to get all of the latest updates. Once again, I'm Ethan Smith, and thank you so much for listening. I hope you'll get out there and enjoy your own life experiences.